the proclamation that Jesus, Jesus said, I am king.
Right.
And that, and so they were saying, well, now they're teaching that there is another king.
Right. You know,
emperor worship, right, was full blown in Rome at this time. So there is only one king but Caesar. And so this is the play that they make. And if you remember when we talked about how quickly the people went out to seek to kill Jesus when he raised Lazarus from the dead, was because they were worried about the Romans taking their place in their nation. It wasn't about the Son of God. Rich?
I'm wondering too if the fact that the reason that they brought that particular topic to light was the fact that maybe that they wanted to breathe out that insurrection idea so that they get Rome involved in this too, to get them on their side for more firepower.
Excellent observation, Rich. I believe that's exactly one of the primary reasons, if not the primary reason. There, you would think, you know, with some healthy opposition, you know, I mean, when blasphemy was spoken in the New Testament, especially when Jesus was teaching to the high priest and things like that, what would they often do when they would hear these things? They would rent their clothes, right? You know, and they would scream out blasphemy, right? So those that were genuinely, I mean, just viscerally invested in being obedient to God, when they would hear things that were contrary to what they believed God to be teaching, it kind of makes you sick, doesn't it? I mean, it does me. I mean, when I stand up here, or not stand up here, but when I'm sitting and listening to someone teach and I can tell they're teaching false doctrine, it almost makes me sick. And it should make you sick too. Because a lot of times that false doctrine is very appealing. And sometimes that false doctrine drags people straight into the den of wolves. And so we should be very moved when we hear people teaching falsely. However, their interest, right, was this issue of the king. And I do believe, to get them even interested, are they going to be interested in matters of their own law? Right? We saw that play out with Jesus. They're not. But yet, once you get them interested in the fact that there's some kind of insurrection, there'll be an infidelity to the king. Ooh, I can see Rome getting pretty interested in that. But yet, that is, again, their play, unfortunately. Any thoughts or ideas about that? Kind of transition here to the next question. Number 5 says, what happened when we read that the rulers had taken security of Jason and the others? What is that? How do we understand taking security of? That's kind of an odd thing.
My guess is it's probably like a bond or some sort of monetary compensation, like behave yourselves or the money.
It's very much that. I mean, when you dig down into it, it's kind of a surety or a bond. If any of you are in the property or real estate worlds, you kind of know how those things work a little bit. It is kind of a payment of funds that was enough to secure. What do you think? What are they trying to secure from Jason?
There'll be no more
trouble. Like, you're turning the world upside down. You know, we're gonna take care of a surety or a bond here to make sure that none of this happens again. Now, I don't know how much money that was, but I just wonder, you know, Jason leaving that crowd wondering what Paul would do next. how much expense would there really be getting tied up with preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ? But then after this, you know, kind of uproar, tumult, mob, these accusations, the surety happening, what did they immediately do after that? There in verse 10.
Yeah.
Right, the brethren had a lot in that, did they not? Verse 10 talks about, and the brethren immediately sent away Paul and Silas by night unto Berea. Okay? Now, if I dare even say we can understand Paul's personality to some degree, I'm willing to bet he probably would have stayed there a while because he was not threatened. He's not threatened by opposition. But yet, of course, you know, working with the brethren there and, of course, them seeing the need and the benefit to move them on to Berea, that's exactly what they did. And when he went to Berea, where did he go? Shocker, right? He goes to the synagogue. And he starts reading. Very good. Now, these are kind of the meat of what I was hoping to kind of discuss with you just a little bit this morning. In verse, or chapter, number six, rather, what does it mean to be noble? I mean, if there's one verse in the scriptures we're probably real familiar with is, these were more noble than those in Thessalonica, and that they received the word with all readiness and searched the scriptures daily to see if those things were so. I hope that that's something that is pretty common for you.
John. Fair-minded without prejudice.
Okay. Fair-minded without prejudice. You know, a lot of times, noble is really often talked about kind of a birthright kind of thing or some type of physical situation. But this certainly is not that, right? This is more of a mindset, right? Or a disposition of heart. And what made the Bereans more noble? John.
Their commitment to the Word of God. They were even testing Paul. They were committed to that.
Excellent. And I love the summary statement of that, right? They were committed to the Word of God. Because when I think about verse 11, we so quickly, at least in my experience, we so quickly jump to the fact that they search the Scriptures daily. And that is profoundly important. Because we must know the Word of God. But when we jump to that focus, what are we jumping over? What did they receive?
Message.
And how did they receive it? Eagerness. Folks, if I could build emphasis on anything this morning, I want you to remember that is such an important reason of why the Bereans were more noble than those of Thessalonica. They received the word, just like Jason received Paul and Silas. He housed them. We house the Word of God when we let it in our hearts. When we let it dwell in our minds. Jason fed them. He gave them provision. Do we do that with the Word of God? Do we meditate on it? Do we let it have housing in our lives and in our thinking and in our doing? Do we make occasion and an opportunity for it? They received it. And they received it with all readiness. They were anxious. They were eager to hear it. And these are Jews. How different is that? More than just Jews, but yet how different is that than that in Thessalonica? And then, of course, what came? What came of those that were eager to hear, eager to receive the Word of God? Right? And that is the absolute. And I don't know why it always says not a few and not a small. There's a bunch. Why? You know, just can't. There's a whole bunch of people that believe this. It's just the prominent women, not a few. It's just, you know, I get accused of talking in circles sometimes. It's a little hard to understand sometimes. So we're running out of time here. We'll try to get these last two in. Was the success of the gospel in Berea without event? No, it wasn't. How far is Thessalonica from Berea? Any idea? Anybody look? I suppose it's this way for you guys. So about 50 miles. So, you know, I've driven pretty far, you know, to go to outlets for the girls, you know, because there's good deals at the outlets, Dad. You know, we gotta go different places to do different things. We travel great lengths sometimes to see friends, go on vacations. But would you travel 50 minutes or 50 miles, you know, cause this is way more than 50 minutes back then to do something like this? Now, I mean, I feel pretty passionate about some things, and I've traveled great distances for those things, but it's a good exercise for us to think about. You know, they were willing to travel 50 miles to go stir up the people because they were not liking what Paul was teaching because he was turning the world upside down, wasn't he? So it's just interesting here, but yet you notice that didn't impede God's plan. We can try to get involved and slow things down and stir things up and get the rabble crowd involved all we want. But God will always come through. And we must be found not fighting against God. So where does this opposition send Paul and his company next? Because this is where we'll pick up next week. Where is he headed off to next? Athens. And man, Athens is a happening place, isn't it? Athens, there's a lot going on. And so But we see someone else kind of pick up in the company here, and we're going to read a little bit more about him next week as well. Who do we read about kind of joining back in the company? Very, very, very prominent person in the New Testament. Very much a helper to many. And he certainly was a great helper to Paul. Timothy. Timothy is back in the scene. Now, again, we don't want to over-speculate. I mean, he could be traveling along as we're going, but we don't read of him formally until we pick him back up here. And we'll be anxious to see what they get involved in Athens next week. Thank you all very much for your thoughts and your time this morning in class.